I think, is based on some of these stories, particularly Bible, in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know, I guess.
Do you remember when, can you possibly remember when you first became curious and wanting to know things like that?
Things like that?
Yeah, like wanting to know answers, wanting to ask questions.
When things didn't make sense. I was being told things that didn't make sense to me, and I couldn't sort of, up to a certain point, everything was like, wow, this world works. Things work in this world. When I fall and stumble, it hurts. When I do something nice to somebody else, they smile. And things make sense, and they all fit together in the same thing. There's rules or laws that just work. But when people started saying things that didn't necessarily make sense, that's when I wanted to figure out whether it was something I should believe in or agree with, or try to find out what it was about it that didn't make sense.
Okay, so do you remember that sort of being like a turning point for you to reach the point where you wanted to know more about things that don't make sense? Do you remember when that might have been?
It was, I don't have a specific time, no. I think it was a general feeling as a child, sometime in school. And it had to do with probably some issue of justice that was not just.
Yeah, or injustice.
An injustice occurred, and I didn't understand how such a thing could be. And then I realized that that's when I began to realize people's different perspectives made all the difference in the world as to whether they thought something was true or not. And then I began to try to distinguish between what is true and what people think is true.
Way back then?
Even back then. Yeah. And it was pretty confusing, too, because adults would speak with complete authority, as if something was absolutely true. And on things that I could see, they couldn't possibly know.
Whoa, you just hit another subject I've been talking about on one occasion this week, about medicine currently is in a condition that we regard as advanced compared to 100 years ago. 100 years from now, medicine now will seem like primitive.
Yeah.
100 years from now, the medicine that we think is advanced today, we look back and see these are primitive times. And yet, we're surrounded by specialists who actually are regarded with like tremendous admiration for how wise they are in their trade, mm-hmm. even specialties. And 100 years from now, it'll seem like these were like shaman, you know.
Right.
Or whatever they called the tribal leaders, you know, in thousands of years ago, who had all the respect of the tribe, mm-hmm. and didn't know anything about what they were doing other than they somehow filled a position of authority somehow and wisdom, and actually went along with it, and actually maybe have believed that they knew answers.
And in effect, whether it was truly what they did or said that affected a cure in their patient,
yeah.
or not, the patient was cured.
Oftentimes, that's how they got their reputation.
Right.
Yeah.
And because everybody in the village of this shaman believed that what the shaman said was the law, was what was going to happen.
Yeah, he controlled life and death of the members of the tribe.
Yeah. Now, was that because he actually controlled life or death, or was it because they all believed that he did?
Yeah.
And it's that I was kind of thinking about as a kid. The perspective
is what made the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I believe that there really is a truth that is the truth, whether or not a person can agree or disagree with it or show it to be so. I wish I had a better way of putting that, that it doesn't matter if I believe gravity is or not. I can believe whatever I wish about it.
As long as you don't stand under a falling, like, ton of bricks.
Right.
It's okay. But I got a word for what you're trying to say. See if this fits. Truth is on a sliding scale. And we pay as much as we can afford to pay at any given moment, you know, on our ledger.
Do you think that's so?
Well, at this moment, you and I have an opinion about something that we believe is true. Mm-hmm. Next week, we may look back on what we think is true today, and we say, well, I think I've been thinking about that, and I'd like to, like, revise that a little bit.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So then we would start getting into the, it seems like today that gravity always works. And that's about as far as we can go, because we can't really know if tomorrow gravity will cease to work. Or that we'll discover something about gravity that means you can reverse it.
And then, and talking about, like, perception, this is a perception of gravity on the planet Earth, which is one little dot in one huge galaxy, which has, like, billions of these dots. Mm-hmm. And gravity may not be the same everywhere else, right?
Well, and there's probably pieces to it and conclusions you can draw from it that we've just never seen yet, and that we will eventually come across these phenomena.
Yeah, we're trying to expand our perceptions now, astronomically, space, time. We're trying to expand our perceptions, and we can't even reach the next planet out from the sun.
No.
In this one solar system.
And it wasn't but a few, really, relatively short period of time ago, a few hundred years, that we thought the world was flat.
Yeah.
And that the world was the only world. And that our universe was the only universe, and that was all there was.
Right, right. And there was a guy who was jailed for saying no to that.
Yes. Poor guy. Wow. And do you think we have learned over these years to place less attachment or greater attachment to our opinions? Because that's what it comes down to, that they are.
Yeah. What was your question again?
Do you think we're growing in a direction of greater attachment or lesser attachment?
I think it's cyclical. I think humanity goes through cycles. And like when they're downward, like going downhill, I think people think that their opinions are absolute truths, and their level of humility goes down, way, way down, and their egotism and narcissism goes way up in those bad times. You know, so I think human beings become more absolutist when they're, let's say, most degraded, you know. So those are the times when civilization is on the decline. Mm-hmm. So, but then, let's say, after they bloody their nose for a few decades or a few centuries and begin to, like, develop a little sense that maybe they don't know it all absolutely, mm-hmm. then they start to become more open-minded, you know. Right?
I think so.
Everyone becomes more open-minded after they hit their head against a brick wall long enough.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
You start thinking, perhaps. You start saying things, it seems to me right now that such and such is true.
Yeah.
Rather than saying such and such is true.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody also about dictators who think they're doing a good deed to their countrymen.
Right.
That many of them actually believe they're doing the right thing.
And how did they get to that point, other than being surrounded by sycophants and courtiers that are telling them all the time that what they're doing is wonderful, and what? How do they get to that spot where they actually believe that what they're doing, despite the fact that they actually looked at the full results, you would see consequences that are abhorrent?
You just conjured up in my mind the image of a woman, let's say, with a schizophrenic type diagnosis, who's having a baby, and she imagines that that baby is like the savior and messiah, mm-hmm. for all mankind.
Okay.
And raises that baby accordingly, you know. So the baby grows up brainwashed into believing that he's important.
Sure.
He or she,
yeah,
is important. With no idea whatsoever as a little kid of what importance even is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she brainwashes him, so he grows up carrying this air of confidence, right?
Yeah.
Surrounded by pre-syncophantic, like, friendships, you know, pre-syncophantic. They just kind of like are followers, right?
Right.
They're not syncophants yet, okay? They're developing syncophants.
Okay.
And they learn when they are seemingly fortunate enough to have this star, this leader in their midst, they feel fortunate and they become followers.
Right.
So for every megalomaniac, there develops and cultivates an array of followers that are looking for someone to, like, idealize, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a phenomenon that goes and comes.
And what's amazing to me, you've made me think of a lot of the history and books and things that I've read in the recent past about kings. You know, how did we ever come to the point of thinking that a king is a good idea?
And then an emperor after a king.
Yeah.
An emperor.
And then these kings, because of the way they were brought up as a prince and then a king who could do no wrong, we lifted them up to be basically deities.
Deities, yeah.
So now we've got all these deities running around, and most of whom are shocking in how horrible and mean and unlike what I believe God is actually like. And yet they're held up as closer to God than the regular people, us peasants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, us peasants, we don't even deign to figure out that stuff, more yet think a king might not be a quasi-deity.
Yeah.
And then you still, it's because he's only enabled to do that by that group of people that, following on this star, are able to lift themselves up a little bit higher.
Yes.
Just by being followers.
They want to be on the right side of the throne, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't, except for the man who could see the truth, which was that a king is not a good idea unless he's truly working for humanity.
Whoa, you just hit on the entire Old Testament, the five books of the Bible. It's like a whole history of prophets, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Micah, whole series of prophets. Their entire, like, reason for being on earth was to go to the kings and tell them what they were doing wrong. As a result of which they were either elevated or imprisoned.
Right. Right. And there's bloodshed to follow. And even, I mean, just right up until, well, we still have a king in England. Or I guess it's a queen right now.
We have
a king. And
there'll be a king soon, I guess.
And they still haven't gotten rid of that, despite the fact that anybody who takes a step back and lets go of our past baggage of opinions about that kind of thing and looks at it, it's an absurdity. It's an absurdity. Why should the masses pay for the upkeep, and quite an upkeep too? This is not a trivial number for regular people, of the cost to keep that family.
Well, Because like if you go for the example of someone who might have been a real bona fide king, let's say Christ, didn't want to be treated like a king.
Because he actually was looking out for humanity.
Yeah.
And so when they offered him the kingship, which I think he had offered to him several times, please be our king.
And he was accused of accepting it, which he did not do.
No, and that's part of the teaching, is that, no, you don't want a king in the terms that people think of kings. A king you can have, but if that king would be doing it out of a labor as the lowest of the low to serve humanity, basically, not ever to serve himself, which is what it appears to be. We have in place today, we have tyrants, essentially, at the top.
I mean, in every country, it seems to be ruled by a kind of the concept of a king. In almost every country in the world, there's hardly anything in which the rulers are actually dedicated to the population that they're serving.
And in fact, it seems to me that it's the opposite. What they're doing is serving as a protectorate of the people in power.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah. And that's the opposite of what I think the real teaching was there of Jesus. And he made many examples of that. You know, washing the apostles' feet. Let the one of you who wants to be first be last. Over and over he said these things, and we still don't seem to get it.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know if this fits in with it, but there has been developed in Christianity the belief that Christ died so that all sins would be washed away, which is like a real freebie if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah.
You know, so that no one else has to worry about their sinning because Christ took care of all the sins.
Yeah, and I've heard some really troubling things about that.
Really?
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Thomas Paine, his writing, when he wrote Common Sense, he was a man who lived in the time of the American Revolution, 1776.
Uh-huh.
He wrote his Common Sense in 1775, or it was published around then.
Common Sense, huh?
It was a book that he wrote named Common Sense.
What a title.
Great title. And it was. It was full of common sense. And it was about, you know, why would people submit to this kind of tyranny and for what gain? And after that happened to be July 4th, 1776, which was, you know, the Independence Day for the United States, where they declared that they were no longer subjects of the king, essentially.
Yeah, and they were going to start a whole new way of life.
And the after that, he continued to write, and he just took apart the Bible.
Wow.
With contradictions that he found within the Bible. One of them being about that in particular
that
we were talking about. Yeah, that God would become a man so that he could sacrifice or murder himself over a crime that a man had committed of eating an apple that a lady ate at some other time, as if God needed to have his revenge, even though it was him who is the one who made it the wrong thing in the first place. And just this kind of, if you look at it in the way that he was looking at it, Mr. Paine, it's an absurdity. Why would the Almighty, if he's Almighty, need to send himself to be his own son in order to be killed and crucified to make up for the sins of somebody else?
Yeah.
And it's this perspective business that really gets me thinking about this, because I think there is a God.
Yeah.
I don't know. And that's what I was getting at about the when I start to wonder which pieces of this puzzle that is life are actually true and which ones are made by these tyrant kings along the way to serve their own purposes.
Well, I even suspect that that there's a strange transition to where in Rome, the Romans were instrumental in crucifying Christ, and yet they were instrumental in forming the first pope and the first church of Catholicism.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I there's the cynic in me, which, you know, I've got a pretty big cynic in me, says, well, it was for gain. It was for material gain. And they used the most profound and truthful, humble, beautiful creature, Jesus Christ, to put forward their materialistic, essentially avaricious, evil crud.
So are you touching on an area that I've been wondering about for a long time, which is organized religion, let's say supposedly originated by dedication to the original prophet of God that came, wherever, whichever religion it was, having political roots?
Yeah.
What a concept.
Yeah, and it probably did, and it probably still does. And to this day, I don't know if the people who are in organized religion even understand it. There's a lot of people, like we said at the beginning of this conversation, that just don't bother to find out. They don't bother. They don't either. They don't care enough, or they're not interested enough to try to find out the truth of the matter.
Yeah. Well, if you use Thomas Paine's book, like Common Sense, wouldn't it be possible to take all the historical, you know, pointers and knowledge from the Bible, and written down historically in the Bible by somebody, and use common sense to really make heads or tails out of the Bible?
I think you can, yeah, and I think people should. I think in the sense that it does good for humanity, and makes people want to do the good, right things, it's beneficial to me that people should. But then there seems to be, over the course of history, always people who use that as a tool to gain some kind of leverage over the other people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, selling indulgences. If you have enough money, you can commit any crime you want. You just pay for it. Somebody else can be guilty for you.
Yeah, that was. I don't know if that's still going on, but it was going on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did. It went on for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you can know for sure what parts of it are actual fact and which parts of it aren't. But what I do know is, as you were saying, if you look at the whole thing and trying to distill the truths and the good that are in it, with that in mind, that it is obviously a very beneficent book.
Yeah, if you look at it. So let's say all we know is that that we have the report that Christ died and 3 days later came back from the dead. So, first of all, was he examined by a physician to see if he was dead?
You would think on such an occasion there would be such an uproar that he would be, but no, there was never any record of that.
No.
What we have, in fact, is hearsay.
Yeah.
And the difference between what the Bible calls, or the religions call, the Word of God, and what we have is that. If God speaks to me directly, then what I can say is that I have had revelation. Right? And then I can say to you, God has revealed to me this truth, that 2 + 2 = 4, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You can't really say that you've had a revelation because of me telling you that, because that would be just hearsay. Right? You heard me say that. But
yeah.
You don't have any way to know if I really was spoken
to. Not without my having a revelation, too.
unless you had one too.
Yeah.
And then I would be in the same difficulty. Wow, is Doc making this up? Or is this something real to believe in or not? So with that at the very foundation of everything in that book, or books, many books, how do you really, really get to the nut of it? And that is that there is great wisdom taught in it. And things that if you practice them, you see the benefits of them coming back to you, as it says in the book, 7 times, 70 times.
Yeah, yeah.